harm themselves is the question that parents whose children are self-harming wrestle with on a daily basis. Self-harm seems to go against every innate instinct of self-protection and survival. It is therefore a confusing and distressing concept for parents, grandparents, siblings, and friends to come to terms with. It can evoke the strongest feelings of anxiety. Family members can naturally become highly protective and reactive, and live in an unhealthy and exhausting state of high alert. It is also not uncommon for me to hear tones of frustration from teachers as they talk about self-harm. They might say, "She's just ruining her body. Maybe he just needs to toughen up. Everyone has issues. What makes her life so dramatic?" Or, "I wonder how much of this is just about attention." I notice that professionals' default reaction is often shaming, blaming, and criticizing, not because they don't want to help, but because they don't know how else to handle it. I have even secretly found myself thinking, "What can possibly be this bad?" when faced with a client I was unable to make progress with. It can feel very frustrating when you want the best for someone who doesn't want the best for themselves. However, to get it, I have had to make a conscious effort. I have had to personally approach each young person struggling with self-harm with an open heart and patience. A definition. The official term for self-harm is non-suicidal self-injury, NSSI, which simply means deliberately injuring yourself without suicidal intent or ideation. Most young people deliberately injure themselves in an attempt to cope with, express, or control emotional pain. Some use self-harm as a form of self-punishment. Although self-harm may bring temporary relief, it is important to note that it does not solve problems. The 2015 Mental Health Child and Adolescent Report tells us that approximately 10% of young people consciously experiment with self-harm at some stage through high school. Other research estimates self-harm ranges between 7 and 24%, with initiation in the middle school years. Self-harm is probably a lot more common than most research suggests, as surveys are usually conducted with young people who go to hospital or their GP after self-harming. We know that a lot of young people do not seek help after they self-harm, and that behavior is often hidden from clinical services. Although some very young children and some adults are known to self-harm, and it can continue from childhood into adulthood, the majority of people who self-harm are aged between 11 and 25 years. Those who self-harm more than once usually cease this behavior within 2 years, and only 20% persist for more than 5 years. It is not uncommon for young people to grow out of self-harm and develop other coping strategies as they move through their teenage years into adulthood. However, it is also recognized that a history of self-harm is the greatest predictor of recurrent behavior in adulthood, since 1 in 3 young people who self-harm will do it again in the following year. Self-harm can be classed as highly addictive behavior. I am particularly passionate about the early intervention and prevention of self-harm, because during this time, it is most responsive to the support that caring adults can bring. The link to suicide. When parents find out that their son or daughter is self-harming, they often question whether their young person wants to die. For this reason, I want to give this topic some specific discussion and hope to answer some of your questions in an honest, balanced, and thought-provoking way. Self-harm can be performed with the intention to die, attempted suicide, or without the intention to die. Rates for non-suicidal self-harm are up to 3 times higher than self-harm with suicidal intent, although it is acknowledged that it is difficult to clearly separate intent from behavior. It was previously thought that self-harm existed on a continuum of severity with suicidal behavior. However, today, self-harm is increasingly recognized as an important health issue in its own right, with a psychology of its own. Although the link between suicide and self-harm definitely needs to be researched further, there is enough evidence to suggest that self-harm can stand completely independent of suicidal thoughts or actions. It is important for us to understand that people who self-harm do not necessarily want to